attacks, gatherer and rotundo. 5. King of Portugal, natural son. 6. Franz, Leopold, Prince Rigaczy, of Transylvania. This last seems to have been the correct view, according to the most reliable sources that have been found, and other information to which we have had access on this point. This theory is also held by Georg Hezekiel in his Abenteuer Liechtische Seelen, I. 35, Berlin, 1862. Karl von Weber, op. Sid. I. 318, also says that M. de Street Germain openly appeared in Leipzig in 1777 as Prince Rigaczy, and that he was often known as the Graf Sergi, which latter is merely an anagram for Rigaczy, Rigaczy. This last fact we have verified in another interesting set of articles, to which we shall refer later, written by a person who knew him at Ansbach under the name Sergi. Another writer remarks, his real origin would, perhaps, if revealed, have compromised important persons. And this is the conclusion to which, after careful investigation, we have also come. Prince Karl of Hesse, writing of M. de Street Germain, says, some curiosity may be felt as to his history. I will trace it with the utmost truthfulness, according to his own words, adding any necessary explanations. He told me that he was 88 years of age when he came here, and that he was the son of Prince Rogatsky of Transylvania by his first wife, a Tekli. He was placed, when quite young, under the care of the last Duke de Medici, Gian Garstone, who made him sleep while still a child in his own room. When M. de Street Germain learned that his two brothers, sons of the Princess of Hesse, Wolfried, Rheinfels, has become subject to the Emperor Charles VI, and had received the titles and names of Street Karl and Street Elizabeth, he said to himself, very well, I will call myself Sanctus Germano, the Holy Brother. I cannot in truth guarantee his birth, but that he was tremendously protected by the Duke de Medici I have learnt from another source. Another well-known writer speaks on the same point, an author, moreover, who had access to the valuable Milan archives. We refer to the late Cesare Cantù, librarian of the Great Library in Milan, who in his historical work, Illustri Italiani, 2. 18, says, the Marquis or San Germano appears to have been the son of Prince Rigaczy, Rigaczy, of Transylvania. He was also much in Italy, much is recounted of his travels in Italy and in Spain. He was greatly protected by the last Grand Duke of Tuscany, who had educated him. It has been said that M. de Street Germain was educated at the University of Siena. De Genlis in her memoirs mentions having heard of him in Siena during a visit that she paid to that town. The whole life of M. de Street Germain seems to have been more or less shadowed by the political troubles and struggles of his father. In order to understand this, we must take a brief survey of his family history, a survey which will moreover give us some clues, helping us to unravel the tangled web of mysterious elements which surrounded the life and work of the great occultist. Few pages of history are more deeply scored with sorrow, suffering and impotent struggle than those which tell the life story of the efforts of one Rogatzi after another to preserve the freedom of their principality, and to save it from being swallowed up by the rapidly growing Austrian Empire under the influence of the Roman Church. In an old German book, Genealogus Archivarius aus dem Jahr 1734, pp. 409, 410, 438, Leipzig, a sketch is given, on the death of Prince Rogatzi, of his family, his antecedents and descendants, from which we will quote some leading facts. Francis Leopold Rakosi, or Rakosi, according to the later spelling, the father of the famous mystic, made ineffectual efforts to regain his throne. The Principality of Siebenbürgen. The Rakosi property was wealthy and valuable, and Prince Francis, grandfather of the mystic of whom we are writing, had lost his life in a hopeless struggle to retain his freedom. On his death, his widow and children were seized by the Austrian Emperor, and hence the son, Francis Leopold, was brought up at the court of Vienna. As our informant says, the widowed princess, who had remarried Graf Tekli, was forced to hand over her children with their properties to the emperor, who said he would become their guardian and be responsible for their education. This arrangement was made in March 1688. When, however, Prince Francis came of age, his properties, with many restrictions and limitations, were given back to him by the Emperor of Austria. In 1694, this Prince Ragazzi married at Köln, am, N, Charlotte Amelia, daughter of the Landgraf Karl von Hesse, Wanfried, of the line of Rheinfels. Of this marriage there were three children, Joseph, George and Charlotte. Almost immediately after this period Prince Ragazzi began to lead the conspiracies of his noblemen against the Austrian Empire, with the object of regaining his independent power. The history of the struggle is most interesting in every way, and singularly pathetic. The prince was defeated and all his properties were confiscated. The sons had to give up the name of Ragazzi, and to take the titles of Street Carlo and Street Elizabeth. Let us notice what Hezekiel has to say on this point, for he has made some very careful investigations on the subject. We are, in fact, inclined to think the Comte de Street Germain was the younger son of the Prince Franz, Leopold Ragazzi and the Princess Charlotte Amelia of Hesse, Wanfried. Franz, Leopold was married in 1694, and by this marriage he had two sons, who were taken prisoners by the Austrians and brought up as Roman Catholics. They were also forced to give up the dreaded name of Ragazzi. The eldest son, calling himself the Marquis or San Carlo, escaped from Vienna in 1734. In this year, after fruitless struggles, his father died at Rodosto in Turkey, and was buried in Smyrna. The eldest son then received his father's Turkish pension, and was acknowledged Prince of Siebenbürgen, Transylvania. He carried on the same warfare as his father, fought against and was driven away by Prince Ferdinand of Lobkowitz, and finally died forgotten in Turkey. The younger brother took no part in the enterprises of his elder brother, and appears, therefore, to have been always on good terms with the Austrian government. Adverse writers have made much mystery over the fact that the Comte de Street Germain was rich and always had money at his disposal. Indeed, those writers who enjoyed calling him a charlatan and a swindler did not refrain also from hinting that his money must have been ill-gotten. Many even go so far as to say that he made it by deceiving people and exercising an undue influence over them. If we turn to the old archivarius already mentioned, we find some very definite information that not only shows us whence the large fortune possessed by this mystic was derived, but also why he was so warmly welcomed by the King of France, and was so well known at all the courts of Europe. No obscure adventurer is this with whom we are dealing, but a man of princely blood, and of almost royal descent. Turning back to the old chronicle, we find in the volume for 1736 the will of the late Prince Franz, Leopold Ragazzi, in which both his sons are mentioned who have been already named, and also a third son. It also states that Louis XIV had bought landed property for this Prince Ragazzi from the Polish Queen Maria, the rents of which property were invested by the order of the King of France in the Hotel de Ville in Paris. We also find that considerable legacies were left which were to be demanded from the Crown of France. The executors of this will were the Duke de Bourbon, the Duke de Maine and the Comte de Charleroi and Toulouse. To their care Prince Ragazzi committed his third son, to whom also he left a large legacy and other rights on this valuable property. Hence we must cast aside the theories that M. de Street Germain was a homeless and penniless adventurer, seeking to make money out of any kindly disposed person. These were the views and ideas of the newspaper and review writers of that day, put forward in the leading periodicals. Unfortunately, the law of heredity prevails in this class of people, and there is a remarkable similarity between the epithets hurled by the press of the 19th century at the venturesome occultist of today and those flung at M. de Street Germain and other mystics of lesser importance and a minor merit. We will now pass from this portion of our subject to some of the personal incidents related of M. de Street Germain. Perhaps the most interesting are those given by one who knew him personally in Ansbach during the period that he was in close connection with the Markgraf. It appears that the mystic made two visits at different times to Schwalbach, and thence he went to Triesdorf. We will let the writer speak for himself on this point. On hearing that a stranger, both remarkable and interesting, was at Schwalbach, the Markgraf of Brandenburg, Anspach invited him to come to Triesdorf in the spring, and the Graf Sergi, for this was the name under which he appeared, accepted this invitation, on the condition that they would allow him to live in his own way quite unnoticed and at peace. He was lodged in the lower rooms of the castle, below those occupied by Mademoiselle Clayion. The Markgraf and his wife lived in the Falkenhaus. The Graf Sergi had no servant of his own. He dined as simply as possible in his own room, which he seldom left. His wants were extremely few, and he avoided all general society, spending the evenings in the company of only the Markgraf, Mademoiselle Clayion, and those persons whom the former was pleased to have around him. It was impossible to persuade the Graf Sergi to dine at the prince's table, and he only saw the Markgraf in a few times, although she was very curious to make the acquaintance of this strange individual. In conversation the Graf was most entertaining, and showed much knowledge of the world and of men. He was always especially glad to speak of his childhood and of his mother, to whom he never referred without emotion, and often with tears in his eyes. If one could believe him, he had been brought up like a prince. One day Sergi showed the Markgraf an invitation which he had received, sent by a courier, from the Graf Alexis Soloff, who was just returning from Italy. The letter pressed Graf Sergi to pay him a visit, as Graf Orloff was passing through Nuremberg. The Markgraf went with Graf Sergi to Nuremberg, where the Graf Alexis Orloff had already arrived. On their arrival Orloff, with open arms, came forward to meet and embrace the Graf Sergi, who now appeared for the first time in the uniform of a Russian general, and Orloff called him several times, Caro Padre, Caro Amico. The Graf Alexis received the Markgraf of Brandenburg, Anspach with the most marked politeness, and thanked him several times for the protection which the Markgraf had accorded to his worthy friend. They dined together at midday. The conversation was most interesting. They spoke a good deal of the campaign in the archipelago, and still more about useful and scientific discoveries. Orloff showed the Markgraf a piece of Unignit table wood, which when tested produced neither flames nor cinders, but simply fell to pieces in light ashes, after it had swollen up like a sponge. After dinner Graf Orloff took the Graf Sergi into the next room, where they remained for some considerable time together. The writer, who was standing at the window under which the carriages of Graf Orloff were drawn up, remarked that one of the Graf's servants came, opened one of the carriage doors and took out from the box under the seat a large red leather bag, and carried it upstairs to the other room. After their return to Anspach the Graf Sergi showed them, for the first time, his credentials as a Russian general with the imperial seal attached. He afterwards informed the Markgraf that the name Sergi was an assumed name, and that his real name was Rogatsky, and that he was the sole representative and descendant of the late exiled Prince Rogatsky of Siebenbürgen of the time of the Emperor Leopold. So far this narrative is tolerably accurate, but after this point the author proceeds with the history of what he considers the unveiling of the notorious Comte de Saint-Germain, in which all the various theories about his birth, to which we have already referred, are retold with embellishments. Amongst other wild reports, it was stated that M. de Saint-Germain had only become acquainted with the Orloffs in Leghorn in 1770, whereas there are various historical proofs showing, without doubt, that he was in 1762 in St. Petersburg, where he knew the Orloffs well. We have moreover heard in Russia that he was staying with the Princess Marie Galitzin at Arkhangelskoy on March 3, 1762. The following details were found in Russia, and sent by a Russian friend. The Comte de Saint-Germain was here in the time of Peter III, and left when Catherine II came to the throne. M. Piley thinks even before Catherine's time. At St. Petersburg Saint-Germain lived with Count Rotari, the famous Italian painter, who was the painter of the beautiful portraits which are in the Peterhof Palace. The street where they lived is supposed to be the Grafsky Perelik. Perelik means small street, and Grafsky comes from Graf, Count, near the Anichkov Bridge where the palace is, on the Newski Street. Germain was a splendid violinist. He played like an orchestra. In the story of the Rezoumovsky family, Alexis R. was reported to have spoken of a beautiful moonstone Street Germain had in his possession. M. Pylief has seen, he cannot remember where now, a piece of music, some air for the harp, dedicated to Countess Osterman by Street Germain's own hand signed. It is bound beautifully in red maroquin. The date is about 1760. M. Pylief thinks that Street Germain was not in Moscow. He says the Yusupov family have many MSS in old chests, and that Street Germain was in relations with a Prince Yusupov to whom he gave the elixir for long life. He says, too, that Street Germain did not bear the name of Soltikov, Soltikow, in Russia, but that in Vienna he did take this name. About the music signed by Street Germain, M. Pylief now recollects that it belonged to him himself. He bought it at some sale and had it for some time. Then he gave it to the famous composer Peter Tchaikovsky as a present. It must now be in Tchaikovsky's papers, but as the great musician had very little order, M. Pylief thinks it very unlikely that it could be found, especially as at Tchaikovsky's sudden death all was left without any directions being given about the property. We have said that the political events in his family had to some extent shadowed the life of M. de Street Germain. One remarkable instance of this we will now cite. It is, as far as we know, the only one in which he himself makes any direct reference to it, and it occurs some time later than the events which we have just been relating. After the return of the Markgraf from Italy, whither he had gone in 1776, and where he had heard some of the legends and fabrications above referred to, he appears to have sent the writer whom we have quoted to Schwalbach to see the Graf Sergi, and to test his bona fides. We will continue the history as he gives it. On his arrival, he found M. de Street Germain ill in bed. When the matter was explained to him, he admitted with perfect coolness that he had assumed from time to time all the names mentioned, even down to that of Soltikow. But he said he was known on all sides, and to many people, under these names, as a man of honor, and that if any calumniator were venturing to accuse him of nefarious transactions, he was ready to exculpate himself in the most satisfactory manner, as soon as he knew of what he was accused, and who the accuser was who dared to attack him. He steadily asserted that he had not told the Markgraf any lies with reference to his name and his family. The proofs of his origin, however, were in the hands of a person on whom he was dependent, that is the Emperor of Austria, a dependence which had brought on him, in the course of his life, the greatest espionage. When he was asked why he had not informed the Markgraf about the different names under which he had appeared in so many different places, the Graf Sergi answered that he was under no obligations to the Markgraf, and that since he offended no one and did no person any harm, he would only give such personal information after and not before he had dealings with them. The Graf said he had never abused the confidence of the Markgraf. He had given his real name. After this he still remained at Schwalbach. A little later the author of the paragraph just quoted remarks, what resources M. de Street Germain had to defray the necessary expenses of his existence, is hard to guess. It appears curious to us that the writer knew so little of contemporary history. As we have seen, all the sons of Prince Rogozhsky were amply provided for, and the proofs were even more accessible than they are in our day. He goes on to say in conclusion, it would be an ungrateful task to declare that this man was a swindler, for these proofs are acquired and they are not to be had. This is truly an ingenious statement, but borders somewhat on libel. To speak of anyone as a swindler without any proof is beyond the bounds of ordinary fairness, and it is especially incongruous in view of the final paragraph, which is as follows: as long as the Graf had dealings with the Markgraf, he never asked for anything, and never received anything of the slightest value, and never mixed himself up in anything which did not concern him. On account of his extremely simple life, his wants were very limited. When he had money he shared it with the poor. If we compare these words with those spoken of M. de Street Germain by his friend Prince Charles of Hesse, we shall find they are in perfect accord. The only wonder is that a writer who speaks such words of praise can even hint that his subject might be a swindler. If such words can be rightly spoken of an adventurer, then would it be well for the world if a few more of like sort could be found. By Isabel Cooper, Oakley Trinosophia, the rarest of manuscripts. By Manly P. Hall from the Most Holy Trinosophia of the Comte de Street Germain. Introductions by Manly P. Hall, Phoenix Press, Los Angeles. For the utmost significance to all students of Freemasonry and the occult sciences is this unique manuscript, Latres Sancti Trinosophi. Not only is it the only known mystical writing of the Comte de Street Germain, but it is one of the most extraordinary documents relating to the Hermetic sciences ever compiled. Though the libraries of European Rosicrucians and Kabbalists contain many rare treasures of ancient philosophical lore, it is extremely doubtful if any of them include a treatise of greater value or significance. There is a persistent rumor that Street Germain possessed a magnificent library, and that he prepared a number of manuscripts on the secret sciences for the use of his disciples. At the time of his death or disappearance, these books and papers vanished, probably into the archives of his society, and no trustworthy information is now available as to their whereabouts. The mysterious Comte is known to have possessed at one time a copy of the Vatican manuscript of the Kabbalah, a work of extraordinary profundity setting forth the doctrines of the Lucianists and the Gnostics. The second volume of The Secret Doctrine by H. P. Blavatsky, pp. 582-83 of the original edition, contains two quotations from a manuscript supposed to be by the Comte Street Germain. The parts of the paragraphs attributed to the Hungarian adept are not clearly indicated, but as the entire text deals with the significance of numbers, it is reasonable to infer that his commentaries are mystical interpretations of the numerals 4 and 5. Both paragraphs are in substance similar to the Puissance des Nombres de Pythagore by Jean-Marie Ragon. The Mahatma Kuthumi mentions a ciphered miss by Street Germain which remained with his staunch friend and patron the benevolent Prince Charles of Hesse, Castle, see Mahatma Letters to A.P. Sinnott. Comparatively unimportant references to Street Germain, and wild speculations concerning his origin and the purpose of his European activities, are available in abundance, but the most exhaustive search of the work of 18th-century memoir writers for information regarding the Masonic and metaphysical doctrines which he promulgated has proved fruitless. So far as it has been possible to ascertain, the present translation and publication of Latres Sancti Trinosophi affords the first opportunity to possess a work setting forth, in the usual veiled and symbolic manner, the esoteric doctrines of Street Germain and his associates. Latres Sancti Trinosophi is miss number 2400 in the French Library at Rose. The work is of no great length, consisting of 96 leaves written upon one side only. The calligraphy is excellent. Although somewhat irregular in spelling and accenting, the French is scholarly and dramatic, and the text is embellished with numerous figures, well drawn and brilliantly colored. In addition to the full page drawings, there are small symbols at the beginning and end of each of the sections. Throughout the French text there are scattered letters, words, and phrases in several ancient languages. There are also magical symbols, figures resembling Egyptian hieroglyphics, and a few words in characters resembling cuneiform. At the end of the manuscript are a number of leaves written in arbitrary ciphers, possibly the code used by Street Germain's secret society. The work was probably executed in the latter part of the 18th century, though most of the material belongs to a considerably earlier period. As to the history of this remarkable manuscript, too little, unfortunately, is known. The illustrious Freemasonic martyr, the Comte Alessandro Cagliostro, carried this book amongst others with him on his ill, fated journey to Rome. After Cagliostro's incarceration in the castle San Leo, all trace of the manuscript was temporarily lost. Eventually Cagliostro's literary effects came into the possession of a general in Napoleon's army, and upon this officer's death Latres Sancti Trinosophi was bought at a nominal price by the Bibliothèque de Rose. In his Musée des Sorciers, Grillet de Givry adds somewhat to the meager notes concerning the manuscript. He states that the volume was bought at the sale of Messner's effects, that in the front of the book is a note by a philosopher who signs himself IBC Philotorm, who states that the manuscript belonged to him and is the sole existing copy of the famous Trinosophy of the Comte d'Estrée Germain, the original of which the Comte himself destroyed on one of his journeys. The note then adds that Cagliostro had owned the volume, but that the Inquisition had seized it in Rome when he was arrested at the end of 1789. It should be remembered that Cagliostro and his wife had visited Street Germain at a castle in Holstein. De Givry sums up the contents of Latres Sainte Trinosophie as cabalized alchemy and describes Street Germain as one of the enigmatic personages of the 18th century. An alchemist and man of the world who passed through the drawing rooms of all Europe and ended by falling into the dungeons of the Inquisition at Rome, if the manuscript is to be believed. The title of the manuscript, Latres Sainte Trinosophie, translated into English means the Most Holy Trinisophia or the Most Holy Three-fold Wisdom. The title itself opens a considerable field of speculation. Is there any connection between Latres Sainte Trinosophie and the Masonic Brotherhood of Lay Trinosophists, which was founded in 1805 by the distinguished Belgian Freemason and mystic Jean-Marie Rigan, already referred to? The knowledge of occultism possessed by Rigan is mentioned in terms of the highest respect by H. P. Blavatsky, who says of him that for 50 years he studied the ancient mysteries wherever he could find accounts of them. Is it not possible that Rigan as a young man either knew Street Germain or contacted his secret society? Rigan was termed by his contemporaries the most learned Mason of the 19th century. In 1818, before the Lodge of Lay Trinosophists, he delivered a course of lectures on ancient and modern initiation, which he repeated at the request of that lodge in 1841. These lectures were published under the title Cours philosophique et interpretatif des initiations anciennes et modernes. In 1853, Rigan published his most important work, Orthodoxie Maçonique. Rigan died in Paris about 1866, and 2 years later his unfinished manuscripts were purchased from his heirs by the Grand Orient of France for 1,000 francs. A high Mason told Madame Blavatsky that Rigan had corresponded for years with two Orientalists in Syria and Egypt, one of whom was a Copt gentleman. Rigan defined the Lodge of the Trinosophists as those who study three sciences. Madame Blavatsky writes, "It is on the occult properties of the three equal lines or sides of the triangle that Rigan based his studies and founded the famous Masonic Society of the Trinosophists."